I'm curious what unity smells like. I know it's been a while since you've been here, so you might not know what the sanctuary smells like. I'm trying to get a whiff right now myself of what it is that it smells like. And I know that seems like an odd way to start this talk, but it reminds me of a story. And the story is about Father Gregory Boyle, who's the founder of Homeboy Industries in Los Angeles, and he's also a Jesuit priest who was for a very long time the priest of the Dolores Mission. And he tells a story about how at the Dolores Mission they would often have homeless men spend the night at the church, and often that would happen the night before they had their services. And so they worked really hard afterwards to make the church foo-foo. They said, foo-foo it up to get a nicer smell. And they would put Love My Carpet all over the carpets and vacuum everything, and they would put out air wicks, and they'd burn incense right before the 7:30 a.m. Mass and do everything that they could, potpourri in all the corners. But every time it seemed like the grumbling would begin as people started pouring in for that 7:30 a.m. Mass. And so Father Gregory Boyle started out his homily with that question. What does the church smell like? He said. And people were just kind of gazing this way and that, trying to avoid eye contact with him. Nobody wanted to say out loud. He said, come on now, what does the church smell like? And Don Fell, an older man, he didn't care what anybody thought. And he said, it smells honestly like feet. And from there, the conversation went. And he said, all right, thank you. Why does it smell like feet? And somebody else says, because a bunch of homeless men spent the night here last night. And he said, right, that's right. And he said, and why would we have those men spend the night here? And somebody said, because we committed to do it. And he said, that's right. And why else would we do that? And somebody said, well, because it's what Jesus would do. And he said, okay. And then a man stood up real tall and proud, and he bellowed out, it smells like commitment in here. And Guadalupe waved her hands wildly, and she said, it smells like roses in here. And everybody uproared with laughter, because suddenly they could share and embrace in another human being's odor, because there was a shared purpose, there was a shared understanding. And did it change the way the church smelled? No, but it sure changed everybody's understanding. And that commitment to understanding is what I want to talk about today. I'm committed to understanding, and I think you probably are too. That commitment for me goes deep into a desire for healing and equality. I'm committed to understand, to see those blind spots within me removed, to begin to unearth the ignorance within me, to begin to work with what is here, to understand, to better understand. I want to gain a greater understanding of Black people's experience in America. I want to understand our history, because you know there were pages and pages left out of our history book. I want to know those stories that were omitted from those places. I mean, I do and I don't want to know them, because I know that they're really hard to learn about. But it's that hard work that we are called to now. It's the hard work of understanding. It's the heart work of understanding. It's the spiritual work of understanding. And you know, that willingness for us will learn so many things. Did you learn about Juneteenth in school? I didn't. Juneteenth is coming up this Friday. It's June 19th. Juneteenth is the day when the slaves in Texas learned they were free. It was by then 1865, but the Emancipation Proclamation happened in 1863. So for 2 years, they didn't have word that they were free. That's what Juneteenth is. That's why people in Texas especially, but now it seems there's more of a movement for some kind of national holiday for freedom from slavery. That sure seems like something we have a bunch of holidays I don't even understand. So doesn't that seem like something that we might put on the agenda now? That we might have put on the agenda a long time ago, but here we are now. So, you know, what's that saying? I forgot, my sister has some saying about 2020 vision, 2020 hindsight, but anyway, I'll think of it sometime, tell you maybe next week. So what is it that we want to understand? You know, one of the things that, and for all of us, it's going to be a little bit different, right? From where we stand, from who we are, from our background, from our desire and our passions. So I can tell you that I have a deep passion to understand what the divine in me is calling me to do and to learn about and to step into and to enact. And I have a deep desire and need to understand what it is that I can do to help support our community, to move forward, to deepen our own understandings, whatever that may be that is up for us right now. And, you know, I think we need to go deep with this, too. You know, I'm going to challenge us not just to widen our understanding, because I think we're all probably singing the same song on that, but to make it a 360-degree kind of understanding. And so what that means, because if, you know, to really practice our inclusivity, to really full on and practice what we embrace as inclusivity and oneness, there's going to be those places, those really hard places that we've been dealing with for a long time, where our values don't seem to line up with someone else, where we can't really understand how they could commit such brutal acts of violence, where we can't understand where the hatred's coming from or where the fear's coming from. And we know, I mean, we have a sense of, because we've been around long enough to understand that there's hurt underneath that. And so to be willing to work together, to heal, to really come to understand. It's much like what the Truth and Reconciliation process in South Africa, where there was, you know, it's not perfect, but it's been a process of coming to understand one another, to hear each other's stories, the difficult ones too, the ones that you may not agree with, the ones that you feel maybe adamantly opposed to. That's 360 degrees of understanding. You know, understanding is one of our 12 powers in unity, one of our key teachings in unity. It came originally from Charles and Myrtle Fillmore's teacher, Emma Curtis Hopkins, who taught the powers of high mysticism, the jewels of high mysticism. And from that, Charles Fillmore, one of our co-founders, brought forth the idea of the 12 powers of humankind. Understanding is one of those. Understanding is more than just a mental understanding, although that's a really important part of it, is an intellectual understanding. It's also more than that. It's like a fully digested understanding, you know? So yes, we take in information and knowledge, but then we, in a spiritual way, it becomes sort of a digested, a heart knowing, if you will, or even down to this power of wisdom that's located in our solar plexus. So understanding is located in the prefrontal cortex is one of the places where it's located. And it's also located underneath our feet. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. So understanding is both that knowing, but it's also, like I say, that sort of the deeper knowing, right? The innate knowing. We can understand something from an intellectual standpoint, but then there's that, oh, now I understand, right? It's that kind of landing understanding. That's what we're after. It may start with schooling ourselves, educating ourselves, having conversations, reading, watching videos, you know, taking classes and so on, and that's all important. But it's what we do with that. It's the contemplation, the reflection, the conversation, the digestion that's a really big part of this understanding. So understanding is also represented by the color gold. And understanding is golden, isn't it? It's a golden thing to be understood and to understand one another. And it's, I think, what's really called for right now. So you might remember the biblical king, King Solomon. He was the successor to his father, King David. And he became a king when he was 15 years old. So a pretty young man to inherit this enormous kingdom and be expected to lead it. And so God came to him in a dream. And in the dream, God asked him, what is it that you want? What is your desire, Solomon? And Solomon said this. He said, I am only a child. I do not know how to go out or how to come in. He said, give your servant, therefore, an understanding heart. Now, God was really pleased. He didn't ask that the lives of his enemies be taken. He didn't ask that he himself have a long and healthy life. He didn't ask for riches or glory or status. No, he just wanted an understanding heart. And so God said, you got it. You got that understanding heart, and I'm going to throw in the riches and the honor and the long life and everything else you could possibly desire. And so King Solomon had a very peaceful reign. They say that he had a very united monarchy because he ruled with an understanding heart. In fact, ruled is probably the wrong word. He extended an understanding heart to his people. And that's what we are called to do, isn't it? That's what I think all of us, well, I can't say all of us, but I hope many of us in our community are wanting and praying for an understanding heart for ourselves, for our community, for our world. Because with that, so much comes, right? With that comes possibilities of greater harmony, greater peace, a sense of security and safety and freedom and all of the things that I think we hold as dear and important values to us as a human family. This isn't easy work. I mean, if we really dive into this, if we really go the distance with the idea of coming to understand racial inequality and trying to right the injustices of our world and experience real justice and real peace, it's not easy work. And it is deep spiritual work. Don't be fooled by thinking it's all about the exterior or the, you know, what's going on around us. Because of course, there's a lot going on inside of us in response, isn't there? And it's that process. So for many of us who are white, the norms of life are fairly natural because they were made for us and they were made by us. And so beginning to we've lived sort of in this sort of ignorance is bliss kind of state, many of us. And I know I'm speaking for myself, and I hope I'm not only speaking for myself, so that's why I keep saying some of us and many of us, and I know you'll find your place in here, and you may not always agree with what I'm saying, so I'm hopeful that I'm carrying a message that you can relate to, that we're in simpatico with. And so... We've been in that ignorance is bliss state, and because we haven't looked too closely or felt it too deeply, maybe, or really heard. And you know, I think we need to forgive ourselves and move on from that and not get hung up in guilt, because there's much to do. And there's much, you know, we wake up when we wake up. We become aware when we become aware. And when we become aware enough and enough of us become aware, things tip. That critical mass happens, change happens. Make no mistake, we are in a civil rights movement. It's happening now, right? We all see it around us. And so we can join it, we can be a bystander, or we can put our head under the sand. It's our choice. And I, for one, will not put my head under the sand. So I hope you're with me. I wish you were in here right now and we could be amening together. But I'll just know that we are feeling together, that we are walking together. And even though we may have different perspectives on this, it is about 360 degrees of understanding. So no one gets left out. No voice, no heart, no mind, no passion for what change might and could happen together. So I remember from our inclusivity class, some of you took practicing inclusivity with me a couple, maybe it was a year ago, I can't quite remember exactly when we did it, but Sharif Abdullah tuned into one of our classes, and he said, he's the author, and he said, you are going to get it wrong. Just, you know that. You're going to get it wrong. You're going to make mistakes, but keep trying. So yesterday I was texting with an African American friend of mine, and I said something. It was sort of benign, but it was like, a mistake. And I was looking for the emoji, the embarrassed emoji, and I couldn't find it. And I said to her, I'm going to have that at the ready, because I think I'm going to be needing to use that embarrassed emoji a lot stepping into these conversations. And we both just had a good laugh over it. And you know, we need that, right? We need laughter. We need to lighten it up. We need to, it's serious stuff, and we need to be willing to jump in, make mistakes, know it's going to be messy, and laugh at ourselves, and then keep on moving. Keep on moving together with courage, which comes from the word heart. Take courage. So we can approach this with a beginner's mind, with that kind of curiosity. You know, I love what Solomon said. It was such an interesting way to say it, that I'm a child and I don't know how to go out or come in, you know. It's like I don't know how to start, but we do. We're smart people, you know, and we're not children. We're adults. We're, most of us who I'm speaking to are adults. We've been around for a while. We have a sense of maturity. And we do know. We're smart people. Many of us have gotten degrees and done all kinds of work in the world. And how did we do that? Well, we knew. We just got on the computer and we did a little research, right? We signed up, we enrolled, we took action. We know how to do that. So we don't need to be in a state of paralysis. Hopefully we're alive and awake and alert enough now that we're in movement rather than in that kind of state anymore, if we were at one time. So we can ask ourselves then, in that beginner's mind, in that state of curiosity, what do I want to know? What do I want to learn? What do I want to learn maybe about the history that I missed? Or what do I want to learn from people's experience, from Black people or people of color's experiences? You know, what am I willing to ask? And just listen. Just ask people to tell you their stories. If you can hold a listening space without, you know, overlaying lots of opinion, and just ask and listen and learn and be a silent witness of and somebody who can hold that kind of loving space and learn from that experience. And what is Spirit asking from me now? That question, I think, is always a good one to have present for us no matter what's going on. But in this context, it's good to keep asking that. What is Spirit asking for me now? You can even ask it every day of yourself. What is asked of me today? How can I contribute today to resolving an issue like this? How can I help contribute my spirituality, my consciousness, my walk, my desires, my hopes, my sense of life purpose, my energy, my time and talent? It'll be different for all of us. But it's a good question, I think, to ask of the Spirit within us. And we will always be guided to what is ours to do. We only have to listen. And follow is good too. So my current prayer is, lighten up my ignorance so that I may see and know and act more responsibly. We have that ability to respond to this current movement, and what is responsibility but that ability to respond, right? So what is that for us? We ask and we listen. It's a potent time. It's an open window for evolutionary change. So next time you have a negative reaction to something, this is also part of this kind of approach of curiosity and beginner's mind, maybe it would just be helpful to ask another question. I'm curious about that. Can you tell me more? Can you share more about where you got that perspective or how that developed for you or why that's so important to you? And then just, you know, we can learn so much by asking the right questions and listening of ourselves and of one another, of our own group of racially homogenous folks and of people across racial lines, and of our own unity community and the beautiful, you know, we don't have a lot of racial diversity, but we do have some, and it's a beautiful thing. And it's something we can learn from and share with each other. So one of the things that I think we've come to understand is that we've been sleeping and now we're waking up. Love Eternal has a beautiful song about just that. So let's take a moment to watch and listen. Mm-hmm. And so, like Jared and like Solomon, we were sleeping and we were dreaming, but we're awakening now. And as we awake, what do we ask for? What's on our lips from that dream? It is that understanding heart that we are after. And it is on the way to that understanding heart, all the ways that we have spoken of that we can get there, all the ways that we can educate ourselves. The last being walking our talk, not the last, but you know, one of them being the actual application of what it is that we come to understand, the actual embodiment of that, of what is ours to do in the world and to act in the world. That's that part, that second part of understanding. It's interesting that it was located, that 12th power of understanding, located in the prefrontal cortex of our brain, that place where scientists say we reason and we're more reflective, but also underneath our feet. That underneath our feet, standing under us, is the power of understanding. That place where contact is made between our foot and Mother Earth, there is an understanding that I am a divine human being on the earth, that I am embodied at this time for a purpose and for a reason and to perpetuate the ideals of spirituality and the essence of God that I hold and that I bring forth and that I has been formed into being through me, that I become a channel, that I become aware of and grounded in the truth while I am also in that space of transcendent divine intelligence. So that understanding is both underneath our feet and also in that place of divine intelligence is really key, isn't it? I think it is. And so what it demonstrates for us that it isn't just about a learning and an understanding in that way, and it isn't even just about that digested understanding that I talked about in the heart and the power of wisdom, but it's all the way down to the soles of the feet and maybe coming up from the soles of the feet when we stand in truth, when we stand for truth, when we stand united with one another. That's a kind of understanding too. One of the protesters' signs said, "I understand that I don't understand, and still I stand." And isn't that, as my father would say, isn't that the truth? I understand that I don't understand, and still I stand. That's it, in a nutshell. That's what we're about, is to be willing to recognize, I don't get it all. In fact, I don't get a whole lot. And day after day, we awaken to, wow, there's so much I didn't know or I didn't pay attention to. It's not that we didn't have access to it. We just, maybe I didn't pay attention to. And now there's an opportunity to stand in truth, to stand for truth, to stand beside our brothers and sisters and make lasting change that is just for all, that is in service to all, that is loving and inclusive like our community. So understanding takes a willingness to heal. It takes a willingness to listen. It takes a willingness to be side by side. The story demonstrates it, I think, really beautifully. Bryan Stevenson wrote a memoir called Just Mercy. And he is an attorney and also the founder of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama. He said that there they have a little museum and they started doing this thing where they would give people a jar and they would ask them if they wanted to go out to one of the lynching sites and collect some dirt from that space in honor of the individual who lost their life there in that cruel and brutal way. And so for a lot of people, they heard the presentation and some chose to take the jars and do this and some didn't. And they would also be sent with a memo about that area, about where it happened and the person's name and information about the lynching that took place there. So there was a middle-aged African-American woman who was in one of these presentations. And she said that, she tells a story about how she was nervous about it, but felt called to do it. Ever feel like that? Maybe right now, nervous about this, but called to do something. And so it was a pretty remote area. She felt nervous about going by herself, but she decided to go ahead. And so she took her jar and a memo, and she went out to this space, and she started to dig with her little garden trowel. And she said she looked up, and there was a man in a truck who drove by and slowed. And she got really nervous, and her heart started to beat. And he turned around, and he drove by the other way, and he looked at her, and he stared, and she got more nervous. And she said then he pulled over, and he got out, and it was this big white man, and he started walking toward her. And she remembered what she'd been told is that you don't have to say why you're there and what you're doing. You can say you're just getting dirt for your garden. And so she was going to say that. And he came up and he said, "What are you doing?" And she said that something came over me and I just had to tell him what I was doing. And I said, "I'm digging dirt here and I'm putting it in this jar because a man was lynched here in 1931 and I want to honor his life." And the man said, "Is that paper there, something about that?" She said, "Yeah." So he handed her she handed him the paper, and he read it. And he said, "Could I help you?" She was stunned. And so he got down on his knees beside her, and she went to give him her garden trowel. And he said, "Oh, no, 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 you use that." She said this man started throwing his hands in the dirt and digging really deep. Well, she was digging with her garden trowel, and she was really feeling, you know, the passion with which he was digging. She said his hands were getting black with the soil, and he just kept on digging. She started to cry, and he said, "Have I upset you?" And she said, "No, you're blessing me." And so they kept on digging together and filling the jar. And then she said after a while, she noticed he had stopped digging and his shoulders were shaking. And she looked and he was crying and she put her hand on his shoulder and she said, "Are you all right?" And he said, no, I'm not. He said, "I'm afraid my grandparents were involved in this lynching." And she said they just sat there crying together and filling that jar. And then he said, when they were done, "I'd like to take a picture of you with the jar." And she said, "I'd like a picture of you with the jar." This must have been before selfies. And so they each took pictures of each other. And then they went to that exhibit and they placed it together. Now, Bryan Stevenson says that not every story of restoration ends that beautifully and that happily, but we just keep on doing the work. You know, we keep on offering this to our people. And he said, we have, you know, so many of these jars and that are honoring these folks in this place. It's unbelievable that lynchings are still taking place in 2020. It's not just something of the past. And the only way that we can stop them is if we're willing to cry those tears together, if we're willing to dig that dirt together, if we're willing to fill those jars together, these humble, humble honorings. If we're willing to get down there together in the dirt and let our hands get black with soil and cry and grieve and heal and move together and face our history. It is what it is. And to keep pushing it away and to keep trying to put it off into the shadows, it's not working anymore, right? Secret's out. The shadows have been illuminated. The question is, what will we do now? And for every one of us, it is to search our hearts, to ask for that understanding heart, and then to search that heart for how it might look for us. And how it might look for us as a community is of utmost interest to me. How can we band together as a community? How can we help heal as a community? How can we contribute to this within our community and all around and in our greater world? The psalmist, I think, said it best in Psalm 73, when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. It's when we go into that sanctuary of God that we find truth. It's when we go into that sanctuary of God that we find passion and fire. It's when we go into that sanctuary of God where we cannot say no to what propels us into purpose, into what is right, into what is just, into what is equal, into what is loving, into what is connecting, into what is divine. We know these things when we go in the sanctuary of God. Sometimes we resist going into the sanctuary of God because we may not want to know, but now it's laid bare for us. It's outside us and it's within us. And so there's no running, no hiding anymore. Here we are. What will we do? What will we do? I used to think about what would I have done back in the civil rights movement? What would I have done back in the time of slavery? I don't have to think back there anymore because it's here. The opportunity is here. How will I show up now? And can I look myself in the mirror and say, I did what I could. I did the best I could. It's in the sanctuary of God where we will find what is just. It is in the sanctuary of God where we will find our connection. It is in the sanctuary of God that this will not be a wearisome task, but an energizing one. Because it's right and it's true. And what if we all did this work? What if all of our community did this inner work? What if we walked together on this journey? You know what this sanctuary might smell like? For one, understanding. For one, unity, our namesake. I don't know, and maybe more than anything, I think it might smell like fresh air. We can all breathe fresh air. The breath of God. Let's drop into that sanctuary for a moment and pray. And so I invite you to go into that place within yourself, to that heart that yearns to understand and that heart that has already come to understand so many things on your spiritual journey. And we give thanks to that God that guides us, that God that gives us this understanding heart, that understands that with an earnest desire in our dreams and in our prayers, and as we awaken from this dream now, this nightmare into a dream of the future, that it is with an understanding heart that we go. We claim that, we affirm that. I have an understanding heart within me. In the sanctuary of God, we find that we get energized, that it isn't so wearisome anymore, that we feel a sense of connection, we feel a sense of divine flow, and that we can breathe, not just us, but we can, everyone can breathe now, breathe the very life spirit of God, that we can breathe openly and easily and evenly and equally and justly. Thank you, God, for this sanctuary, for this place that we go in and we get refilled again and again and again, and we get new understanding. Thank you, Spirit, for guiding each one of us in our community, for making untold contribution yet to be revealed, for being a sanctuary that smells like fresh air. And so it is. So let's go together to this sanctuary of God. Let's go together in this power, activating this power of understanding. Let's dig deep within ourselves and really be able to offer this to the world for ourselves. So together, I have an affirmation for you up on the screen. Let's speak this together. Through the power of God within me, I dig deep and develop a more understanding heart. And so it is. Bless you all.